Acting Office of Personnel Management Director Beth Cobert is speaking this week with members of Congress, cabinet-level chief human capital officers, and leaders within her agency to reassure them she's taking OPM's problem seriously. Cobert assumed the role of acting director on Monday after Catherine Archuleta told OPM employees it was time for new leadership to step in. John Pescatore is the director of emerging security trends at the SANS Institute. He argues in a letter to the editor, soon to be published on federalnewsradio.com, that the wrong leader has been let go in response to OPM cyber breaches. And John joins us now. Hi there, sir. Thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.
And I should say that letter by John and Alan Paller, his colleague at the SANS Institute, will be up on the site later this afternoon. And I guess two questions really to start off with, John. One, was it appropriate for Catherine Archuleta to have been let go in response to this? And either way you answer that question, who should have instead?
Well, I think it's actually easier to force out political appointees in the department and agency heads than it is to force out a CIO or a chief security person. But in general, most of these type of breaches and what's been reported at OPM, you can trace it back to serious deficiencies in the information technology operations, which, you know, falls squarely under the chief information officer, and that's where the blame should start. But certainly the head of an agency where had breaches the past couple of years and had actually gone backwards in security, you know, the buck is going to stop there, but that makes a big splash, but it doesn't really address the underlying problems.
And you note in that op-ed that, again, most of these big breaches can be chalked up to failures of basic hygiene. Do we know that pretty definitively to be the case here?
Well, I've yet to see any validated public information that says what the exact root cause that enabled this breach was. But from the various reports and the testimonies to Congress, there seem to have been several factors. Use of an obtained account, stealing somebody's password, possibly
right,
through a phishing attack. So one clear deficiency was they were not using stronger authentication for these very sensitive systems. So that's a clear lack. Generally, in order for somebody to get the type of access to a database, it also means there were configuration management problems, which the Inspector General had reported. Those problems persisted at OPM. And those are essentially basic hygiene and sort of process issues that should have been dealt with.
One thing that hasn't gotten much attention, and I wish it would get more attention, is there any good reason for this important data set, this massive trove of background investigation records, to be stored in an internet-connected system in the first place? I mean, that's kind of not directly related to authentication measures and cybersecurity, et cetera, but why have this stuff online anyway?
Well, you know, almost invariably today, we need those sort of network connections to enable people and agencies in multiple locations and third parties to access things. It's very rare that a system today isn't going to be connected to the network. What's more important, though, is when serious vulnerabilities were divulged, there was a recommendation to disconnect until we can fix things, and that recommendation was ignored. You know, you might remember back in 2001, I believe it was, the Department of Interior was ordered by a judge to disconnect from the Internet because
right,
they could not protect the Bureau of Indian Affairs banking information. So I don't think in today's world we can say things shouldn't be connected to the Internet, but there's lots of precedent for if it looks like it's too dangerous to be connected, disconnect, fix it before you reconnect.
One rationale that's come up in congressional hearings for not imposing greater security measures, particularly encryption, has been that it would just bring these aging legacy systems that so many federal IT agencies use to their knees because they don't have the processing power. They're cobbled together in ways that would make it terribly inefficient to apply modern technology to them. Is there any merit to that argument as far as you can tell?
Not a lot. I mean, certainly systems that are so old that nobody can effectively maintain them or enhance them. Certainly those are pretty hard to secure. But in general, a lot of the comments that came out of the testimony about old networks and old systems that couldn't handle encryption, that's really not true. There are hardware add-ons where encryption can be done in front of a database rather than on an aging system. I think also some of the other problems that have been pointed out that led to the OPM breach. Encryption was not going to be a cure-all. If somebody's password is the only thing protecting legitimate user access to that that database, doesn't matter if the data is encrypted because the bad guys act as a good guy and decrypt it. So things like strong authentication, you know, a lot of people are familiar with on their Google accounts where they get a text message to their cell phone instead of just relying on a password. There are many things that could have been done regardless of how old the systems and networks were.
And you're saying that things like two-factor authentication are pretty easy to implement even on older systems.
Especially for very high-priority systems. If you try to roll it out to every person in the federal government, which the federal government has a program to do, the PIV card program.
That's 10 years now.
Going on for years, that's obviously hard. But for something as sensitive as background investigations, SF-171 databases, that should have been a very high-priority application for stronger authentication.
Your colleague Alan Powler in that op-ed I mentioned says that one of the additional people that should have been fired is the security audit director on the IG staff at OPM for, quote, auditing the wrong things in cybersecurity. I don't want to ask you to speak for Alan, but A, do you agree with that? And what would the wrong things be, if so?
Well, I think there's an OMB-wide or government-wide issue about guidance to the auditors. You know, OMB A130 is where you find the security guidance to auditors. It hasn't been updated in 20 years. So when you read any OIG report, including the most recent ones about OPM, they tend to just start at the same spot every time and work their way through all the things they have to audit. They tend to rely on what's reported to them by the department and agency versus any sort of inspection or, you know, actual seeing if things are secure enough. And they haven't been given guidance to prioritize the time they spend and the way they report results. So inevitably, in OPM, they report about, only a small percentage of systems had gone through certification accreditation, and buried 10 pages down is the more important security findings. So the individual auditors, whether they were derelict or not, we can't really tell from just reading the reports, but overall, the guidance that's given out by the OMBs of the world to what IG should do is in bad need of updating, and that should happen immediately.
If IGs are measuring cybersecurity using outdated criteria, can you tell to what extent that's actually driving cybersecurity behavior within agencies? I mean, are they aligning their practices to the things that they know that they're going to be audited on?
Well, yeah, I think two things are happening. The auditors tend to check the things that are easy to count. Show me all the certification accreditation reports for your system so I can see if you have them. And that leads people to say, producing those reports is more important than actually securing the system. So, yeah, that is a pretty much systemic problem in government agencies, that the way the FISMA reporting process is set up and run and monitored. You know, for example, in this area of continuous monitoring, where if you're effectively continuously monitoring your critical systems, you would quickly know if they're vulnerable, quickly know if they had been under attack. The IG report actually listed OPM as having 97% of their systems continuously monitored, way near the top. Were they not monitoring this system? Was it in the 3% and it wasn't important enough to be monitored? Or were they monitoring in a way that was totally useless? Those are the types of things that an audit should uncover.